Hi, thanks so much for staying with Sharad and I on Consider This. However, if you've just joined us tonight, we're discussing the announcement for Parliament to reconvene for 5 days, starting the 26th. Now, what incentives are there for bipartisanship during this parliamentary sitting? Let's ask political scientist Dr. Wong Chin Huat. He joins us on the line now. Chin Huat, hello, good evening. Let's begin our conversation tonight by you sharing your thoughts on what you made of the Prime Minister's Office announcement for Parliament to reconvene for only 5 days, especially after, during this period of an emergency and a pandemic and Parliament being shuttered for 6 months. What do you make of this 5-day sitting?
Now, the 5 days is clearly to meet the Royal's request to have it as soon as possible and also before the emergency expires so that the Parliament would not stand automatically dissolved. But the government also very smartly used this reason to have a short 5-day session so that a sitting so that you're going to have a bit of debates on this national recovery plan. However, not enough for a full meeting. What it means is that we will not have a royal address, and therefore you will not have a chance to vote on the royal address. Because if the royal address is rejected, it is not a rejection of the king, but of the government, because the royal address is actually written by the government. So very smartly, the government has avoided that by having only 5 days.
Chinua, do you see in this rather sad that is suspicious of our parliamentary democracy that, is essentially about holding on to power?
Yes. I think so, but the question will come back here now. With these 5 days, you're going to have a debate on that national. The first thing is to lay before the two houses the emergency proclamations and four ordinances that have been enacted during the period. The question now we need to ask is that would MPs be allowed to vote on them? Because if they are not allowed to vote on them, and that national recovery plan is going to be tabled in a one-way traffic way, meaning that the MP would actually get the briefing, then we are not really having the parliament reopened. Rather, we have the parliamentarians become students sitting in classroom listening to their lecturer. What is important to stress is that even if the ordinance get defeated and so on, or the National Recovery Plan get defeated, that is not a full vote of no confidence. The government definitely can survive.
Right. So you're not expecting during the 5-day sitting for there to be any kind of open debate or open contestation for a majority in parliament?
The opposition would definitely, both by opposition, I mean both PH and UMNO, would definitely want to show that the government is weak. So if any of the ordinance or the National Recovery Plan get defeated and so on, they can claim that government, there's a sign that government has lost the confidence of the House. But that itself is not sufficient because we are no longer living in, first half of 20th century, where a defeat of bill is enough to bring down a government. No, it doesn't work that way anymore. So you can show that the government has a weak basis, but that's not good enough for you to say the government must step down. So what is important, I think, for us is to actually look at whether the ordinance would actually get repealed, because you have some very far-reaching implications. For example, Section 10A and B give the federal and state government excessive powers on finance matter. And then you have the second ordinance, which create as healthy punishments as 500,000 and 6 years imprisonment for fake news-related offences. So we need a parliament to actually strike that down, because otherwise the bill would stay in power for 6 months after the terminations of emergency, meaning all the way to 1st of February in 2022. So that's really what we need to have a debate for.
Chinua, you have been one of those voices perhaps not lone voices, but one of the several voices calling for bipartisanship. The question, I guess, would be, what are the incentives for the current administration to, in fact, reach across the aisle and strike a deal, if not their own political survival? And if their survival is not at risk, why would they engage in bipartisanship?
Survival is certainly at risk. It's just a question of how fast does would it come. Because if you can skip these 5 days, but after that, you're going to have a formal opening. At that time, you would have the royal address. That would be the first chance for the opposition to defeat the government. And in our system, because the system does not require a constructive vote of no confidence, so you can bring down the government even you do not have an alternative in place. So, and you have a royal address to defeat the government, which the Speaker cannot stop it. The Speaker can only stop any motions of no confidence. Then after that, when you come to later part of the year, you're going to have a budget to be defeated again if you lose your confidence. So for the government to really sit down and really want to get a chance to rule the country, for the Prime Minister to seize the opportunity to leave a positive legacy, he must have the wisdom and the courage to reach out to the opposition and strike a deal. It's nothing shameful at all. In fact, he should look at New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern as an example. Her first-term government was a minority government with about 46% of majority, but she got a CSA with an opposition party, the Greens, and she survived so well. In the next election, her party won a majority, an absolute majority, which is very difficult with a proportionate representation electoral system.
So when we're looking at what's going to happen in the next month, what do you think Malaysians should keep in mind? I mean, beyond the question of changing leadership and who might be the successor, should, say, for instance, good governance, which is a very troubling issue that we've had to witness over the last year and a half, is good governance something beyond us?
No, I think what YB Madhya said just now, he talked about the old model of governance after 1969. Anyone who read our political system should be able to know that decisions are not made solely by the minister and certainly not by the parliament. Most of the policies are actually made by senior civil servants who would then package it in the way the minister wanted and get to the parliament to be passed. Now, what it means is that you are talking about very small groups of people making those decisions. And our society is no longer in the 70s when it's relatively simple. So today's society has a lot of competing demands. So you need to accommodate them by bringing them to the table. And this is why the emergency has caused much more damage to the country. Because instead of a cabinet administrations of 70 over people, it was narrowed down to 9% in the National Security Council. Therefore, we see policy blind spot, which then invites public backlashes, which then caused the government to flip-flop its policy. And therefore, everyone feels that the government is losing its plot. And this is a situation we need to overcome now. Go to Parliament.
Right.
The idea is really to set up more select committee so that every MP would be made use. They would bring their idea. Yeah. Thanks.
Sorry, Chinua, we've run out of time. But yes, we take your point about having more parliamentary select committees. Thank you so much for joining us on the show tonight. That was political analyst Wong Chin-Huat. That's all we have for you on this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutan, signing off the evening.
Thank you so much for watching the show, and good night.